You're listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network. Welcome to Dolphins Talk Weekly, your one-stop audio breakdown of all of this week's Miami Dolphins news. Now, here is your host, Kevin Durr.
Good morning and welcome to episode 10 of Dolphins Talk Weekly. I'm your host, Kevin Durr. You can follow me on Twitter at KevinMD4. You can like and listen to the show on Spotify, iTunes, Spreaker, wherever you get your podcasts. On this week's episode, and I do apologize for getting it out there a little bit late, but my brother-in-laws and I got together for some March Madness on Saturday night, which is usually when I try and record. And needless to say, we didn't get the podcast out in time, so we're recording it now, and hopefully this will make a nice start to your week. On this week's episode, we're going to start with a brief X's and O's segment about a popular misconception that's kind of circulating on Dolphins Twitter right now. We'll discuss the news of last week, including the newest free agent signings, Miami's big day of trading on Friday, and what that means for their options with the new slot in round one, and how that might affect their draft strategy for 2021. So let's dive into it. First segment is the X's and O's bit, and I've seen a lot of people talk about this. I know Kyle Van Noy came out and he had the no comment when he was asked about Brian Flores, and he explained himself on the Pat McAfee show saying it was basically the question came up and it was a damned if he does and damned if he doesn't scenario. You know, are you going to kind of praise the coach who just cut you, or if you say something bad, does, you know, he look like a salty, you know, ex-girlfriend type of thing? So, you know, I know people have talked about Kyle Van Noy and the lack of production and all that. I think that's pretty false. I've written pieces about that. We've talked about that on the podcast before. You know, it is what it is. I think for Miami, it's basically a salary dump. You know, they saved, I think, what was it, $9.75 million in cash against the cap this year. And they've done a great job of spending about every free penny they have up to this point. And, you know, they don't do anything without a plan in Miami. And I think they obviously have an idea of how to replace Kyle Van Noy. You know, it's basically an edge-setting linebacker role with some off-ball stuff mixed in. But what I have seen a lot of is people saying that Andrew Van Ginkle replaced Kyle Van Noy last year. That is patently false. It is not accurate. Andrew Van Ginkle and Kyle Van Noy, both outside linebackers, played different positions in Miami's defense last year. Andrew Van Ginkle was what I would call an edge linebacker, you know, basically playing like a stand-up defensive end. And I know the Dolphins kind of fudge around with the team depth chart when the NFL makes them list it, and they make every team list it in either a 3-4 or a 4-3, which is hardly what any team plays because they're all a nickel or some other various form of sub-package most of the time anyway. But if you notice on the depth chart, Miami had Andrew Van Ginkle listed with Shaq Lawson, who pretty clearly was a defensive end. You know, there was a few snaps where Shaq stood up, and they do some weird things like that to kind of mess with alignments and line calls and things like that for the opponent. But it's basically a defensive end role. You know, he's not dropping into coverage very often. You know, the most notable instance I can think of is actually Shaq Lawson dropping into coverage from that position. He did it a couple times in the Arizona game. But it's essentially an edge rusher. It's basically playing a stand-up defensive end role. And that's what Andrew Van Ginkle did. Kyle Van Noy had almost 30% of his snaps as an off-ball linebacker. So a lot of times when Miami would play with 3-3 personnel, you'd basically have a stand-up edge rusher in Van Ginkle, three defensive linemen, and then Jerome Baker or Elandon Roberts, one of those two, with Kyle Van Noy as an off-ball linebacker. Now, Andrew Van Ginkle has not done that for the Miami Dolphins. From what I remember of his film at Wisconsin, he did not do that. I've never seen any of his film from the University of South Dakota. So, you know, that remains to be seen whether or not he's actually going to be the guy that could replace Kyle Van Noy. Although, I did say on the podcast, and I think I've said this in two episodes in a row now, that if you look at Andrew Van Ginkle's athletic profile, I think that speaks to someone who has the agility, the athletic ability, the shiftiness, the ability to move in space. He has that profile of an inside linebacker that could do that. We've just never seen him do that. And I think the other hard part of that equation to replicate is Kyle Van Noy's football IQ. You know, my last piece for DolphinsTalk.com was actually talking about some of the dirty work that Kyle Van Noy did. And I highlighted examples of that throughout the season, of him setting the edge, of him being used as a pick player in some of their pass rush games, of him rerouting Darren Waller in the Raiders game to prevent a touchdown, which ended up holding the Raiders to a field goal on that drive. Miami wins by one. You know, without that play, that sequence, that changes the entire complexion of the game. And Miami needs a touchdown at the end after the Mac Hollins play, the Fitzmagic play to Mac Hollins. So those types of things are going to be tough for Andrew Van Ginkle to replicate. But I think he's more than shown that he's able to develop. You know, his improvement from year one to year two was tremendous. And we need that out of as many Dolphins draft picks and players as we can. But, you know, in terms of how they go about replacing that, I think Van Ginkle's a good shout. I don't want to speak to Vince Beagle yet, because you just don't know how a guy is going to come off of an Achilles tear. And Miami's contract that they gave to him is pretty minimal. So that's not really, you know, speaking to having much confidence in Vince Beagle coming back. You know, I kind of wonder, given some of Andrew Van Ginkle's development and the number of draft resources they have, is Vince Beagle just an insurance policy or depth at this point? You know, I guess we'll see. Or does Miami kind of have a shift? You know, one thing I would like to highlight, and there will be a forthcoming article on DolphinsTalk.com in the next week or so from me about this, is if you remember when Brian Flores ran the Patriots defense in 2018, he ran it out of a 4-2-5 personnel grouping more than any other set. So that's a four-man defensive line with two linebackers. He did that 307 snaps that year. His 3-3-5 was second with 226 snaps. And like we talked about earlier in this segment, you can kind of shift your outside linebacker up to the line of scrimmage and slide the front over to make it look like a 4-2 with a stand-up end. And then his third most used formation in New England that year was the 3-2-6, the Ruby package, their dime package, at 126 snaps. So my question is I wonder if the Dolphins may end up adding more of a defensive end type. You know, they never really had that Trey Flowers type of guy in Miami. And if you remember, at the start of 2019, he was the one free agent that Miami kind of made a big offer to in free agency that year. They've never really had that. And I suppose if you were to slot Andrew Van Ginkle over in that role, you know, you're basically looking for another edge player, and perhaps that's something they can do without having to go through as much, you know, trials and tribulations in terms of converting one of these rookie edge players into being what Kyle Van Noy does. You know, Andrew Van Ginkle's already got 2 years in the system in terms of knowledge, about a year and a half is in terms of playing experience. He might be further along that course already and might be a better fit. So just something to keep an eye out for is maybe they use a defensive end type of player, you know, Kwity Paye, a Carlos Basham. Someone like that might really entice the Dolphins to being able to use more of those four-man lines. I would also note that Zach Sealer, in several games last year, I believe it was the 49ers game, the Arizona game, the second Jets game, also got snaps as a defensive end in a four-man line. And if you go back to the Brian Flores first year in 2019, if you watch the Week 3 game against the Cowboys, even Christian Wilkins got lined up as a big end in the defense to try and help stop Zeke Elliott in that game. So I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that Miami wants to run more four-man lines, and maybe that's why they paid Shaq Lawson what they paid him in free agency last year, maybe not expecting Andrew Van Ginkle's development to kind of emerge throughout the year. But just kind of a path that I kind of want to follow a little bit more, follow that thread, kind of pull it, see where it unravels, and I'll have an article up on DolphinsTalk.com within the next week or two, kind of doing a deep dive about the defense and where they could be headed as we are a month away from the draft, which starts on April 29th. Now, we aren't a month away from mowing season in the summer season. I got to have my first patio beer on Saturday. mowed my lawn for the first time. And fellas, if you need to do some personal mowing and getting everything right for the spring season, please check out manscaped.com and use the promo code Dolphins Talk to get up to 20% off of your Manscaped order and potentially up to free shipping depending on how much you order. That's manscaped.com. Use the promo code Dolphins Talk. Now, of course, we had some news come in over the past week about some free agent signings, and we'll hit those before we talk about the meat of this episode, which is the two trades the Dolphins pulled off this past Friday. So, three signings happened after the last podcast. Two of them are familiar faces, and one of them is a newcomer. So let's talk about the familiar faces first, and in the order they happened. Receiver Mac Hollins, or should I say special teams player Mac Hollins, re-signed on a one-year deal with the Dolphins. And I think, you know, that's essentially his job to lose, is being that main special teams player at that wide receiver position. You know, they've used him in various roles. He's a gunner. He's on kickoff coverage. He's on the punt block team. Does a great job with it. He's fantastic with it. He's a big body guy. You know, we've seen him make some big plays. Last year, he caught the touchdown against Arizona. Of course, we all remember him from catching the Fitzmagic play in Las Vegas. But he's probably a guy who's going to be, you know, at the bottom of the wide receiver depth chart, given that Miami's invested in Will Fuller. They made the trade for Lynn Bowden. Devontae Parker hopefully will be back healthy. You know, Preston Williams hopefully will be back healthy. And we're likely to see Miami invest at least one or two picks at wide receiver in next month's draft. So a lot of things to be done at that wide receiver room. But I think Mac Hollins will probably have a spot on special teams. You know, that's his to lose going into training camp. So I like that move, and we know the Dolphins are all about special teams. You know, they've lost a couple guys. Kayvon Frazier's still a free agent. Kamu Hill went to the Texans. So good to see them keep one of their core special team guys in Mac Hollins. Now, we also saw another familiar face get re-signed, and that was linebacker Elandon Roberts. And this one was kind of the first, you know, move that's left me a little bit puzzled this offseason. You know, even if it's a one-year deal, that's fine. I don't think we've seen the terms come out yet. We also haven't seen what the injury was that he suffered in that Week 16 game against Las Vegas. Now, odds are that he got carted off. It was probably some kind of serious knee injury. You know, I haven't seen anything about it on Twitter or on any Dolphins news site. So if you guys have seen something, hit me up at KevinMD4 and let me know. But I haven't seen anything about the Elandon Roberts injury, so we don't really know, you know, when and if his recovery time will be. You know, is he just kind of a placeholder for right now if they make a move at linebacker in the draft? You know, is he someone that's going to start the year on PUP and end up coming in later in the year, or short-term IR? I forget how the roster logistics work with that exactly. But, you know, is he just, you know, kind of a replacement and waiting if someone gets hurt, or how does that work? You know, overall, I think he's a very good B-gap to B-gap run stopper. If you're going to do a lot of, you know, run-heavy defenses this year, I know Miami does play the Tennessee Titans, which would probably be a game that you'd want to feature Elandon Roberts in. Does he have a role there, you know, more so than like Jerome Baker, who's, you know, better off used for coverage and blitzing and that type of thing? You know, I think perhaps he does. And of course, as I'm recording this, Field Yates from ESPN actually tweeted out the terms of Elandon Roberts' contract. And he basically signed a deal that equates to a one-year, $1.345 million contract. So pretty minimal as well. Not quite as minimal as Vince Beagle's, but, you know, I think they're kind of baking into that contract some leeway in terms of him being on PUP or short-term IR, and then coming back at a later date. And the final addition they made last week was Kai Loxley, who was a quarterback at the University of Texas, El Paso, home of Dolphins corner Nick Needham. And Kai Loxley has signed as a wide receiver, 6'4", 210-pound kid. I'll be honest, I have not watched a single second of tape on Kai Loxley. Seems to me like they're just trying to bring in as much competition at that position as they can. If you were putting a gun to my head right now, the only guys that I would feel pretty safe about making the roster this fall would be Devontae Parker and Lynn Bowden. as well as Will Fuller, who they just signed. Other than those three, there's really not a guy that I would feel super confident about saying right now, you know, at the end of March, is going to be here come week one of the regular season. So, you know, perhaps maybe down the road I'll look into Kyle Oxley a little bit more. But this episode is going to be about the two big trades that transpired for the Dolphins this past Friday. So I've seen a lot of people were initially kind of confused by what happened and how the Dolphins went from pick number 3 to pick number 6 and how that transpired. So here are the trades. Miami traded their first round pick, the 3rd overall, to San Francisco for the 12th overall pick in 2021. They also acquired a 2022 first and third round pick. And on top of that, they also got a 2023 first round pick. Miami then proceeded to make a separate trade with the Philadelphia Eagles, sending them the 12th overall pick in 2021, which they had acquired from the 49ers. They gave up their 4th round pick this year, which was pick 123 overall, and a 2022 first round pick, which is their original pick, the Dolphins pick in 2022, and managed to acquire the 6th overall pick in 2021, and then a 5th rounder, which is pick 156. So Miami's draft picks now in 2021 are as follows. They have 1-6, 1-18, 236, and 250, which stayed the same. They have pick 3, the 3rd round pick, which is 81 overall. Then they have no 4th rounder, a 5th rounder, which is 156 from Philadelphia, no 6th round picks, and then they have 2 7th rounders, number 231 and 258, which were acquired from Houston and Kansas City, respectively. Now, how does this affect the Dolphins' draft strategy? You know, well, let's back up for a minute. Let's talk about the flexibility, because one of the few complaints I've seen circulating on Twitter about the trades that the Dolphins pulled off was that they didn't get enough in 2021. Now, that just seems like being greedy to me, considering you've got two additional first-rounders from San Francisco who odds are going to take a quarterback. You've lost your defensive coordinator in San Francisco, Robert Saleh, now the head coach of the Jets. You have a bunch of guys coming off injury, and really you kind of have to rebuild that secondary in San Francisco at this point. So giving up the Dolphins' own first-round pick I don't think is giving up too much. And it may end up being a higher pick, I think likely a higher pick than where San Francisco is going to be picking at least a year from now. And then the other thing it does, and, you know, I hate to even bring this into the discussion, but it does give you a bit of a hedge against Tua Tagovailoa. You know, you're basically committing to him being the guy this year. But if he struggles or if he has another injury, you've at least got a bunch of ammunition, you know, over the next 2 years after this season to use to address that quarterback position if you have to. Now, my gut feeling is the Dolphins aren't going to have to address that position, because I think Tua is going to take a nice jump from year one to year two and prove himself to be the starter. That's why they drafted him at 5th overall in 2020. I think he's going to make them look good for doing that. But you're still going to have to continue to rebuild the team, especially as some of these high-paid, high-priced contracts come due. Hopefully, the new revenue money coming in from the TV deal will help alleviate some of that cash stress. But either way, I think the Dolphins made out like bandits here. Now, as far as not getting enough capital in the 2021 draft, you know, they're moving back 3 spots, and they picked up a 5th rounder as kind of the net of it for just this year, the 5th rounder being from Philly. And they gave up a 4th rounder. You know, I would tell you this. You know, we'll get to the strategy for moving to pick 1 to 12 and then back, or from pick 3 to 12 and back to 6 in a minute. But I think they still have plenty of flexibility. I mean, if you consider last year, and I think a lot of people kind of gloss over this, the Dolphins made 5 trades within the 2020 NFL draft. 5 trades. And they were... They traded from pick 26 to 30 with Green Bay. Green Bay used that to move up to take Jordan Love. And Miami got Noah Igbinoghene, the corner from Auburn. That was trade number 1. Trade number 2, Miami in the fourth round used their own fourth rounder and the fourth rounder that they got from the Packers to move up to the front of that round to select Solomon Kinley, the guard from Georgia who started most of the year at right guard, a couple games at left guard, and played pretty well for a rookie. That was trade number two. Trade number three, and you have to remember, Miami had 3 fifth rounders going into that draft. They traded the first one to San Francisco for running back Matt Breida. So that's 3 trades that they used last year in the draft. Immediately after, that second fifth round pick was used on Jason Strobridge, the defensive end. And then they later traded the third fifth rounder they had plus a seventh to move up slightly to take Curtis Weaver from Boise State. Now that trade and the Breida trade are flops, but every team has these kind of flops, you know, and it's really not even noticed. Miami won 10 games. They're in great position. They just got 2 more first round picks in their arsenal down the road. These things are plus minus all the time. And I think Chris Greer is going to come out on the positive side of the ledger. And then for good measure, they traded a 7th rounder last year to a 6th rounder for Seattle in this year's draft, which I believe has already been traded. And without looking it up, I wanted to say it went to the Chicago Bears for Adam Shaheen, who signed a 3-year extension with the Dolphins last year. So they move around a lot, you know. And if you have pick 18 and you're sitting there and you want to get more picks, you can move down. Maybe there's a couple prospects that fall out of the first round and at the top of the second round, you know, maybe they're at a position that you've already addressed or you feel comfortable with, and you're willing to trade down there and get more. So, you know, I think I saw the stat that since Chris Greer's been the general manager, he's got the 2nd most trades out of any team in the league, behind only New England. I think he's only like 2 or 3 behind them. So I wouldn't fret about getting enough return in 2021. I think there's still ways the Dolphins can maximize their draft capital, and you still have 4 picks in the top 50, which is incredible. I think the Dolphins can make a lot of use out of those, whether they're actually selecting players or trading them and getting more picks for them. They can do whatever they want, just like last year. Now, I think the hope would be is that you get some more early returns than you did on your first rounders last year. The second rounders, Robert Hunt and Raekwon Davis, played pretty well. You know, Noah Igbinoghene had some good moments in there, had some bad moments in there, probably more bad than good, if we're being completely honest here. But I think you can all kind of see that he's got a lot of skills and the kid, you know, just needs time to grow. He was the youngest player in the entire league last year. You know, Austin Jackson played pretty well the first 4 games until he had the foot injury. You know, he missed, what, 1.5 months, 2 months, came back, wasn't quite the same. You know, hopefully he's fully healthy going into this year. And then Tua, you know, coming off the hip injury, you know, basically rehabbing all season, not having very good weapons, goes 6-3 as a starting quarterback. Had some bad moments, had some brilliant moments in the Arizona game, the Kansas City game. You know, hopefully we can get some more positive returns with the first rounders this year. And that kind of brings us to our last segment of the show, which is going to be kind of how does this affect the draft strategy for the Dolphins? Okay. Now, you know, I think I've seen several interviews where Urban Meyer has basically not really beat around the bush, and we know that the Jaguars are going to take Trevor Lawrence. You know, unless something crazy happens between now and April 29th, you would expect Trevor Lawrence to go first overall. You would probably expect the Jets to take a quarterback, you know, whether that's Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, Trey Lance, maybe Mac Jones. Who knows? But odds are they're probably going to take a quarterback, and I think it's going to come down to Zach Wilson or Justin Fields. San Francisco now picks number 3, and I know they say they're going to keep Jimmy Garoppolo in place for this season. You know, they have to say that right now until the draft happens. But you don't trade up that much capital. You don't trade 2 future first rounders to go up and take a wide receiver, you know, or a corner, or your left tackle of the future. You just don't do that. They're going up there for a quarterback. I think the biggest question is, which one? And right now, a lot of the reports come out and say it's Mac Jones. You know, Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch were at his pro day, while, you know, on the same day, Justin Fields had his pro day, they sent their assistant general manager and some scouts. you know, Peter King wrote that in his column. You know, what does that mean? Who knows? But take that as you will. We know that the three quarterbacks are going off the board 1, 2, and 3, unless there's some kind of massive trade between now and the draft. Atlanta, I think, could be a bit of a wild card there. You know, they still have Matt Ryan. I think he's a pretty good fit for what Arthur Smith wants to do with that offense. Atlanta, under Thomas Dimitroff, had always kind of planned to, you know, get ahead of future needs by drafting people, you know, at positions where they were strong but might be losing a guy to free agency or something like that down the road. So to me, they could be a little bit of a wild card. You know, do they go with someone like Jamar Chase here in preparation for maybe moving on from Julio Jones? You know, do they go with a left tackle in Penei Sewell here, you know, with Jake Matthews becoming a veteran, or you can flip him back to right tackle where he played as a rookie? You know, I'm not dead set on Atlanta taking a quarterback, although, you know, maybe that's kind of the one spot where you could see some action. And then 5 with Cincinnati. You know, I live in Southeast Indiana, very close to Cincinnati. I can get there in under a half an hour. I'm from Cincinnati. I do have some connection to the Bengals. I won't go into that, but you'd have to think that their three names are Penei Sewell, the left tackle. I know they signed Riley Reiff, who the coaching staff has already come out and said that's our right tackle. Are they really that confident in Jonah Williams playing left tackle? You know, I'd say based on his film, you shouldn't be. But maybe he can. But, if Penei Sewell's there, I don't see any harm in drafting him to play left tackle and moving Jonah Williams inside. So I think that's one option. I think Joe Burrow is obviously going to stump for his guy from LSU, Jamar Chase. You know, they had great chemistry in 2019 and they're out to that national championship. And if you add Jamar Chase to the Bengals, you know, receiving core, that would give you Chase and T. Higgins outside with Tyler Boyd in the slot. That's a pretty nice trio to have along with Joe Mixon as your running back. You'd still have offensive line questions to address, but with the depth of that tackle class, I think that's a somewhat safe move for the Bengals, you know, giving Joe Burrow what he wants and still being able to land a tackle in round 2. Or do they go completely off the map here and get Kyle Pitts? You know, they had a lot of success having a big athletic tight end in Tyler Eifert for a long time. They really haven't had many options there since Kyle Pitts. And you can use Kyle Pitts in any number of ways, whether it's a tight end in the slot, out wide. You know, I think Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow can be pretty creative with how they use someone like Pitts. So I think the Bengals are more of a wild card than Atlanta, and they're probably going to choose one of those three. So obviously the Dolphins pick at 6 plays off those two, and, you know, you're probably going to have a choice between 3 out of 4 from Penei Sewell, Kyle Pitts, Devontae Smith, and Jaylen Waddle. So I think that's where the strategy comes into it. If they had moved to 12, you know, does Devontae Smith fall there? Does Jaylen Waddle fall there? Maybe. Penei Sewell is not going outside the top 10. I don't think Kyle Pitts is going to fall outside the top 10. I'd be surprised if he did. So, you know, as Peter King put it, and I've seen several people tweet about this, you know, going from 3 to 12 gave the Dolphins a chance to get who they wanted. Moving back up to 6 is going to ensure that they get the pick out of one of their top 3 choices, most likely. And as we mentioned before, they still have plenty of flexibility to trade down, accumulate more picks, trade picks for players, which they did last year, trading for Matt Breida during the draft. So there's still a number of ways they can go, and they're set up very well. I think as far as pick 18 goes, that might be the more ideal spot to try and trade out of and accumulate more picks. You know, is there an edge player that's going to be there? You know, maybe Quiddy Pay from Michigan is there. You know, do you double dip and take 2 wide receivers in round 1? I know everyone's kind of penciling in Najee Harris for that pick. I don't necessarily think you need to pick a first round running back. You know, everyone was talking about Aaron Jones and free agency coming to Miami. He's a 5th rounder. So you know, you can find running backs anywhere in this draft. I don't think you have to spend the 18th overall pick on one, though Najee Harris, in my opinion, would be worth that pick. But maybe you move down a little bit and try and acquire another mid-rounder, you know, and pick Najee Harris at the end of round one. Or, you know, you get Travis Etienne, who might just actually be more their flavor than Najee Harris. I'm not saying he is, but he might be. Or you could look at Javonte Williams from North Carolina as well. But I just have a sneaky suspicion that Travis Etienne might be higher up on the menu than people realize, just kind of given what Miami's done at running back over the year and the type of offense they want to run. So I think really pick 18 is where it kind of opens up. I think number 6 is going to end up being, my gut feeling is it's going to be Devontae Smith, and maybe Kyle Pitts is the wild card there. So if you take a pass catcher at 6, I think number 18 becomes, you know, available for running back. Maybe you look at one of the other offensive tackles in this draft class. Maybe you look at Quiddy Pay or Carlos Basham as a defensive end type of player. Maybe you trade down and try and get more picks. But again, the Dolphins have set themselves up very nicely. They have flexibility to do whatever they want. And Chris Greer, as we saw last year with 5 trades during the draft, is not afraid to move around. So, should be a very fascinating month leading up to the draft. We'll keep you covered here. As I talked about earlier in the episode, going to have a big article coming out in the next week or two, kind of looking at the defense and what they still need to do and how they might shift depending on what happens in the draft. So stay tuned for that. We'll be back next week with episode 11 of Dolphins Talk Weekly. Again, I'm your host, Kevin Dern. Thanks for listening. You can find me at KevinMD4. Thank you guys. Have a great week. Fins up.